This is your theme music. Didn't you request this, Rusty?
I tell you what, I'm going to get my skating. I'm going to the skating ring tonight if I hear this some more.
We've got Rusty Manziel.
Could you skate backwards
studio.
In the day?
Yeah, I used to take I used to take figure skating lessons.
Oh, my gosh. I figured it.
And I rollerbladed.
Man, I would go. I would.
What were you going to say?
I didn't have anything.
You know what?
Nothing.
Bo, just simple yes or no. I want to hijack. Could you skate backwards when you needed to?
God, no.
I could barely skate.
Yeah.
I mean,
but the four wheels are like roller skates are hard, but I could roller blade. Like the single blade was easy.
I was an athlete. I would come off the fool's ball table when that spotlight song would come on because I would have the pick of the girl. I could skate backwards. I was like, no, come on.
How old were you when you got your first cell phone?
Oh, cell phones didn't come out. I did get a bag phone.
I was going to say, what do you
I did have a bag phone. I had a bag phone in like 96.
What were you doing in 1996 that you needed a bag phone?
He had to be on top of college football and high school football.
You see the look he just gave me?
Let me tell you something.
The look he just gave me, I think it must have been for the ladies.
I don't even know if it was hooked up. As long as you had the bag between your... Like, if you had a bag in your car, you had to just hold it up for a minute, man.
Yeah, unless you...
this is going nowhere quick.
I guess you don't need an introduction anymore, so, at all. So, Rusty's here to break down college football with us. You guys all know Rusty.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Rusty.
Keep it to football.
Yeah.
I text you.
Yeah, you were upset.
I don't think I've even told this story on the air.
He was upset. I tried to talk him off the ledge a little bit.
I blew Rusty's phone up Saturday afternoon about 4:15, 4:30.
Bo was probably about halfway in his bottle.
It was hot.
You know what I mean?
It was hot.
Was that the worst targeting call in the history of targeting and football?
That was pretty bad. That was pretty bad.
I mean, what do we do with this rule moving forward?
Don't know. Don't
what
have
game? Tell them the game.
I think everybody knows Florida, Texas A&M.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the targeting on the hamstring.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. It was a bad day for officials. I felt like the Jalen Walker roughing the passer. Like, what else can you do? I thought a couple of games, it's a couple of calls in the South Carolina game. I don't have the answer, man, because here's the problem. The speed of the game happens so quick. We've got to be able to help those guys from the booth. I don't know what we can do there, but you've got to be able to help them quicker, and you got to be able to say, hey, look, you guys got to look at that real quick.
I don't even have as much of a problem with some of the targeting and blindside stuff as I do with the ejections, man. Like, it's happening. So why do we have to kick these kids out of the game? And I say it every week. Like, it's going to take somebody suing somebody over lost wages or something now to get that corrected. It drives me nuts.
I don't want to hijack. I'll give you one. There's a massive lawsuit coming up in the state of North Carolina this week. It's going to happen Friday. A player is suing the North Carolina High School Association because he's a five-star quarterback. He's committed to Tennessee, and he can't make NIL because he goes to a public school. But the private school kids in North Carolina can earn NIL. Oh. And I'm telling you right now, as soon as his lawyer gets done with that, about 2 weeks from now, every kid in North Carolina is going to be able to get money.
Wow.
It's going to happen.
Rusty, lots of matchups this weekend. Is there one that's most intriguing?
I think everybody's
got
eyes on Tennessee at Oklahoma.
Yes.
There's so many questions there. Like, from a Tennessee standpoint, is this quarterback that good? I think he is. I'm not going to butcher his last name because it'll be forever a soundbite. But I do think Nico is for real. But this is his first true road test. Schematically, can Brent Venables in Oklahoma play Tennessee basically the way Georgia's played them 2 years in a row? Georgia's been the one team that's really kind of stoned Josh Heupel's offense twice, 2 years in a row, and how are they playing them? So can they do that? Do they have the players to do that? Is Oklahoma going to be able to handle this SEC gauntlet? And there's a lot of questions there. It's not really a great weekend, but I do think that's the headliner.
That's
the headliner. I want to bring this up, and I don't want to spend 10 minutes on it because I think we easily could spend the entire show talking about this. But you and I were just talking out in the bullpen about this schedule that's coming up in December. And I don't think, to your point, a lot of people realize
not to put
the madness
that
is about to go down when we hit the first week in December. It's kind of break down the way this schedule rolls once you get to portal, SEC championship, playoffs, and everything else.
All right, so the National Signing Day is moving forward 2 weeks. Usually the second Wednesday in December, the new early signing day is about 5 years old. It's moving to the Wednesday of SEC championship week.
December 4th. Yeah.
Okay. So here's the theory behind that. And I kind of like this on one perspective. They're trying to protect the high school kids because signing day is going to be over and done with before the portal opens. So National Signing Day will be December the 4th on a Wednesday, the Wednesday after Thanksgiving. The SEC Championship game will be December the 7th on that Saturday. Well, guess what opens up Monday at 7 a.m.? The old portal window.
The portal, yeah. Right.
Well, guess what happens after 11 days after that? Oh, the old NCAA playoffs first round. Yeah. So you have December 20th and 21st. Bo, don't let me get you excited. Hypothetically, if Florida's open, and just say they're going after Lane Kiffin, and Lane Kiffin is knee-deep in the playoffs as a 5 seed, he's getting ready to host Penn State and Oxford on December 21st. Florida at that point would have to have a national signing day without a coach. They would have to have the portal window open. You've got to talk your kids into staying. You also got to beat down every single rumor that we're not going after Lane Kiffin right now. We're still interviewing candidates. It's going to be a freaking mess.
Imagine.
Mess.
Now, do you delay firing coaches because of this? Took okie doke.
Some will, but a job like that probably won't be able to.
Well, the trajectory that this particular job is on, that the job will be open by September 26th.
But, oh, my gosh. Because, you are horrible.
Well, I'm sorry. I am not a fire the coach guy. Rusty and I had a deep conversation.
We did.
But if you lose to Miss State after they got blown out by, was it Toledo, I believe?
Yeah.
I don't.
Billy's got to win this one.
I don't think you have a job.
Billy's got to win this one.
It's just, it is. It's terrible.
But you look at that. National Signing Day. And the reason they're doing it, because I like that part, they're protecting the high school kids because they've got leverage. Like, okay. The portal was open before National Signing Day. So, you know, School A could be telling Mike Johnson, yeah, we got a spot for you. When in reality, they're waiting to see if that other tackle from college is going to transfer in. And all of a sudden, a week before signing day, they call that kid up and say, oh, yeah, we don't have a spot. So now the high school kids have some leverage, which I really like. But it's also going to force schools to say, okay, we're only going to take X amount of high school and leave something open for portal. So there's the other side of that, too, where some high school kids are going to get cut out earlier. So I really don't know how this is going to work, but this is a massive, massive change that I don't think people realized until yesterday to put that tweet out.
I want to get to the Tate Ratledge injury because I think it is a big talking point. And Lord knows, as you know, as a Bama guy, I've been asked about Tate Ratledge so many times my head has spun in the last 3 days. Yeah. I mean, just unbelievable.
Yep.
The 9 day buildup to that game next weekend.
Yep.
What do you make of it? What's the depth behind him? And you know, what's his timeline look like?
I would say the best case scenario for him would be Florida. I would think they would really want him back for that. So if Georgia plays, they got a bye week. They play Florida, then they play Ole Miss, then they play Tennessee back to back in 3 weeks. Yeah. Oh yeah. By the way, that's a 3 week stretch. But I think for Tate to come back with what he's dealing with, he also has a grade 2 MCL sprain. So that's, you know, that's also with that. I'll be honest with you. When I saw him tapping his helmet, I've known him since he's an eighth grader. The way he immediately started tapping his helmet on the ground, I was like, man, this is it. That's the last time he's ever going to play. So I feel very fortunate he's going to get a chance to play. Michael Morris is a really, really good player. He's the strongest player on the team. Here's where you lose a little bit with Tate Ratledge in the huddle. He's the leader. He's the calm the F down guy. Get focused. Mm. Let's have this drive. He is a clear dude. Like, he's an alpha voice in that locker room. Now, he's going to be involved. But if you're Carson Beck, you always know, I've got my guy right here. I'm not worried about that gap because he's a first-team All-American for a reason.
Right.
And so I'm not going to sugarcoat that, but I will say the drop-off there probably physically is not as much as people think. I think, Mike, you understand the cohesion of a senior leader. When you got a new center beside you, if you tell Jared Wilson, hey, no, this is X call. You can reach over. So 100%. There's a lot.
He's seen a lot of football.
He's seen a lot of football. Ratledge. I actually watched a video of Brock Bowers as a freshman, the 3-game touchdown he scored against South Carolina, and I was looking at the starting line. The only person that's still on the team is Tate Ratledge.
Wow.
So that tells you how long he's played. Like, Brock Bowers is come and gone.
Yeah. Wow.
Side note on Brock Bowers. We did a deep dive in him yesterday. He never lost a regular season game at Georgia.
It's incredible.
He never lost a regular season game at Georgia.
And – good. He's tearing it up right now.
Dude, he's a freak. He's a freak. No doubt.
USC at Michigan is
– Michigan's done.
But this is –
their average is country grits.
But is this – I mean, this is a must win for Lincoln Riley if he wants to make the playoff this year.
And I'm telling you, they're really good defensively. They're really good defensively.
USC.
Yes.
Grits catching strays, by the way.
Michigan's. They're average, I'm telling you.
Because you have to have like grits without cheese are average.
Yeah, you got, yeah.
There's butter. Just give me some butter in my grits and I'm good to go. Yeah. Is there butter? Cheese? There's butter in my country.
What Rusty is saying is Miller Moss's Heisman odds after this weekend are going to start to shoot back through the roof.
I mean, he plays a prime position for a prime offense.
There you go.
He's going to have primetime games, but Michigan's. No, they lost way too much. I've seen enough.
Rusty, we've never had enough of you. Oh, wish you could stay longer, but we've got Grant McCauley coming up. So,
we need some ales from the Mets. Can you dial that up?
I'll make sure I put in that request.
Thank you.
Rusty, thanks for joining us this morning. All right, you heard of Grant McCauley joining us next on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the Morning Shift and going straight to the WadeFord.com hotline. That is where we find our very own Braves reporter and insider and host of From the Diamond, Grant McCauley, joining us here on the show. Grant, we just had Rusty Manziel in studio with us. He's looking for some good vibes, good luck on the Braves side of things. Do you think you can do that for him?
Goodness, that's a tall order at times this year, but at other times it feels like maybe this is a club that can put some things together. But it really depends on the day, the series. Maybe that day's starting pitcher for the other team. I don't really know what all the factors are, but certainly we've seen some a bit of a roller coaster ride this year.
We definitely have. They were able to bounce back and beat the Reds 7-1. Do you think they can keep this momentum? Because they're now within two games of the Mets and Diamondbacks for the final NL wildcard spot.
Yeah, I don't even really know.
I
can call it momentum, it is what the weird thing is, because it's hard to describe it, because it's not like this is a club that doesn't have the pitching to be competitive every single game. I mean, they've proven that time and time and time and time again that the pitching is there, but the offense has been the question. But I will say, in looking at what has gone right at times for this club, especially lately, I mean, obviously Marcell Ozuna breaking his homerless drought last night was a good thing. He's still been getting his hits and taking some walks and getting on base, but the homers and the runs batted in, it kind of dried up on him. But Matt Olson has been swinging the bat extremely well since the end of July. That's a plus. Jorge Soler started to show some signs. I think we're seeing a little something from Michael Harris. And then you get Ozzie Albies coming in. So if you want to talk about momentum, you get that group of five right there going, and then whatever you can get from the bottom of the order, and it's a tall task, and it's a lot to ask for some of these guys who are kind of pressed into duty. I think you could have at least enough offense to consistently give yourself a chance to do something given the pitching that you have, and no better example than the kind of things we've seen from Spencer Schwellenbach this year. That's been a great surprise. Obviously, Chris Sale, who goes this afternoon trying to give the Braves a much-needed series win in Cincinnati, can take another step toward his first Cy Young in his career. That's a great story for the Braves. But offensively, I mean, these questions just continue to just remain prevalent and remain at the front of everything you talk about with the Braves is, yeah, but can they score enough to actually get rolling?
Well, Grant, I'm going to I hate two-part questions, but I'm going to ask you a two-part question.
Here we go.
Because I can't help myself.
Yeah.
First off, let's talk about Ozzie and him coming back, hitting from just the right side of the plate, and what that's going to be about for him. And also, where he would fit
that
into the
lineup.
That was
my question.
I know, and I told you I was going to ask him.
Well, I mean, the first part is probably the only real, I think, question mark that really needs to be addressed is, you know, what's this going to look like for him? And I know that Ozzie's had a lot of success in his career batting right-handed. I've had people for 5 or 6 years saying, we should just give up switch hitting because his numbers are so much better from the right side. But you have to understand, once you start to get a bigger sample size facing right on right and dealing with all of the movements of all those pitches and all those things, it's going to normalize somewhat, but obviously he's great from the right side. So giving this a shot and doing whatever you can, for that matter, for the team to try to give him a boost, obviously Ozzie and the Braves are comfortable with this enough to go out there and try it. He went 4-for-8 in the minors, half of that against lefties, half of it against righties, 2 more hits last night. So I think that you feel pretty good about it. And the fact that he sat around for a couple of months and homered in his first game back. So clearly there's at least enough strength there to hit the ball hard. And that's what you needed to see in the brief couple of games he's played down in Gwinnett. He should rejoin the club in Miami. Obviously, he's going to plug right into second base. And then the question will become, what do you do with some of the other pieces? Because you got Gio Urshela, who's played a very nice third base, defensively speaking, hasn't brought you a lot of offense. You've got Orlando Arcia, whose offense has been night and day different than it was a year ago. And quite frankly, as I've said, and as I posted on social the other day, the ball will find you. He has struggled so mightily with runners in scoring position, and it feels like there's an at-bat every single game that the Braves are either tight, close, or behind, and it's Orlando Arcia with two men on and two men out, and what's he going to do? And it hasn't been particularly good this year by and large. So could you move Merrifield to third, move Gio Urshela to short because he has played there? You could. I don't think he can play Merrifield in the outfield right now. I know Mark Bowman talked to Merrifield yesterday, and he said that, you know, with the broken foot, covering a whole bunch of ground in the outfield for nine innings, I don't think is really going to be a thing they're going to try. So those are the options for them. You've got, you know, 9 or 10 games here to go down the stretch, 10 games to go, including this afternoon's. How many moves, how many changes can you make, and how many of them will really give you a lot of substance down the stretch? Or have you just reached the point where you might as well try it, and kind of like a mad scientist style? But Brian Snitker's options are pretty slim, but getting Ozzie Albies back, I think, is nothing but a net positive.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Grant, no matter what happens in the next 10 games and beyond, I will say this. One of the biggest takeaways I will have from this season is the performance of Spencer Schwellenbach. And yep, he's just not a guy that has pitched a ton, honestly, in just his life. But, you know, he's never reached the innings count he has this year. He said last night after the game, it just feels like a new wave at this point. Like, he feels good. I mean, what can we credit to that? I don't know that we've seen anything quite like him. I don't know how the numbers stack up historically, but, man, he just seems like a guy that he's got such a bright future.
Yeah, he does. And I don't know that there's a lot of, especially empirical evidence that says, oh, well, if you have a pitcher who's thrown X amount of innings this year, then he can only throw X amount or Y amount the next year to get to Z in the third year. Like, that doesn't work. It's not an algebra equation, I think. And I know there's a lot of pitchers, the, you know, older wave of pitchers from previous generations that say, you just got to go out there and keep throwing and consistently do it. And I think that that's a big thing about it. Nothing has proven that shutting a guy down is going to help his development, certainly. I think we've learned that a time or three. And nothing says that, hey, because you shut him down, you're now going to avoid the injury that would have happened had he been out there, because it doesn't seem to be a way to avoid an injury. I mean, it's kind of an inevitability. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. When is the question? And the answer to that is any pitcher can get hurt anytime he goes on the mound because it's an unnatural motion. And that is what creates the problem. But getting back to Spencer Schwellenbach, and to make a long story short, nobody saw this coming in spring training. A lot of folks were high on him. A lot of people expected him to, you know, factor into the future. But what he's done last night, surpassing 150 innings on the season after throwing just 65 professional innings his first year and just over 30 in his collegiate career, this is a whole new level for Spencer Schwellenbach. And the way he's done it, adding pitches to his arsenal and just attacking the strike zone, I mean, it's made him successful, and it's carved out a spot in the rotation, I think, and a very interesting discussion to have about if you do get to October or when you do, where's Spencer Schwellenbach going to be? What's his role? Because it's pretty obvious that he has helped the Braves do what they've done all season long, stabilize that rotation, and I think some more important innings are going to be in front of him, not just this year, but also in the future, because he's certainly shown that he's more than capable.
Grant, when it comes to Marcell Ozuna, do you get a sense of maybe some relief because he ended his home run drought, which was at 26 games, and he got a blast last night?
Yeah, and teeing off on a 3-0 pitch. I mean, that's in some cases low-hanging fruit, but he felt like he was going to get a fastball groove to him, and he did not miss it. I mean, it hit it to the deepest part of the ballpark. It just got out, but a homer's a homer, and I think he felt pretty good about that. And, you know, Marcell has put the Braves on his back over the course of this season, so the fact that he slowed down a little bit here in September, I mean, can you really fault the guy? I mean, he's been at it pretty much all year. He knocked in a couple of runs last night, got to 100 on the season, so two straight 100 RBI campaigns for him. That's a big deal. So if he, again, as I talked about earlier, you know, get Marcell back and going. Jorge Soler has looked very good over the last week and a half. And then Matt Olson has been really, I mean, he's got an OPS just under 950 in his past 46 games and has started to drive in runs again. That's the makings of a good heart of the order. And if the Braves can, you know, set the table a little bit for that group, you have to feel pretty good about the chances that they could do some special things, or at least, as Brian Snitker has said many, many times, just get on a run.
Yeah, it's crazy to think Matt Olson could actually finish with 100 RBIs this season. He's at 90
and 30
now.
Homers.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy where as bad as he's been at times or as bad as it's felt?
It's really unbelievable that's how his numbers
I think. I think he rolled into the All-Star break on pace for something like 22 homers and 71 or 73 RBI. I mean, like, he had stalled out in the month of July. I think it was one of the worst, if not the worst, in his entire career. And here he is having just kind of, either made some adjustments or maybe just hit pause on all that stuff and just tried to simplify things, has gotten himself back on track.
Grant, I don't want to project the next season too much because I know we still have hopefully a whole pennant race to go and postseason. But Chris Sale's pitched like 170-something innings, I think, this year. A lot of that is reduced work because of the way they use kind of the six-man rotation throughout the season to keep him fresh, which has absolutely worked. There's nothing I think he can do to lose to Cy Young. Do you think the Braves, depending on what happens with Max Fried, who I think is gone, but and Morton, you think they would kind of use this type of strategy next year as well to try to keep him and some of the other guys like Renato Lopez as well fresh?
Yeah, I think there's some benefit to it, but you've got to have the right personnel. And I think they did have to rifle through several pitchers, you know, over the course of the year. We saw some of the faces that would come and go, and I don't know if that's necessarily sustainable over 162, but for a first half that sets you up to have guys maybe a little fresher in the second half, they've probably shaved about, I would estimate, by the time we get to the end of the year, 20 to 30 innings conservatively off of Chris Sale's workload in the regular season. And I think they're looking at that as, well, we'd like to pay those forward into October and have him, you know, a little bit fresher. And there is something to be said for it. Whether or not they do it next year will depend largely on who they acquire, I think, in the offseason, because clearly there's going to be a couple of vacancies you just mentioned. Even if you plug in Spencer Schwellenbach and bring back Spencer Strider, I still feel like there's the need for one more very proven and really very good major league caliber starting pitcher that they're going to have to look for over the offseason to really fill that void and to make you feel like you can start to, whether it's A.J. Smith-Shawver, Hurston Waldrop, Ian Anderson, obviously, we haven't seen at all this year, and I don't know if we will or not. We'll kind of see, and that's not no fault of his. I think it just has to do with the options. I mean, if they burn an option at this point for the entire year, I don't know that that's necessarily what they want to do. But putting that all aside, you got to have the right personnel, and that's going to be the big question of the winter.
Grant, where can we find From the Diamond this week?
You'll find me on Saturday from 4 to 6. We'll be talking about everything going on with this wild card race, the Braves, what they need to do over the final week and a half, and obviously the showdown with the New York Mets that is looming. And we'll also dig into some other stories going on across baseball, because I don't know if you guys have noticed, but the Detroit Tigers have all of a sudden put themselves in a position to potentially make it to October, and that didn't look like a thing about a month ago. So some very exciting stuff happening across baseball. You'll find it all on From the Diamonds right here on 92.9 The Game on Saturday from 4 to 6 and wherever you get your podcasts.
Grant, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate the time.
Thanks, everyone.
That was our Braves reporter and insider and host of From the Diamond, Grant McCauley. You can follow him on X at Grant McCauley. We got Life of Squid.
Jason Kelce apologizes for what was an Eagles fest on Monday Night Football.
It's not your fault.
But it... Yeah, is he to blame or should we really be blaming someone else? I've got some answers and some thoughts. Next on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and
the Odyssey app.
That's right.
This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com.
Tiff, it's gorgeous outside.
Offer on your home today and start packing.
You need to get Ro-Ro and hit the trail this afternoon. Just throwing that
trail
out there.
Might be doable today.
It is gorgeous outside these windows.
I don't know what it feels like, but it looks nice out.
It feels like that I'm going to light my grill up tonight and watch football. That's exactly what it feels like outside.
That sounds like a good plan. No. Are you going to invite the meat man over?
No, I'm busy.
I'm still angry at him about stealing my question for Grant.
Yeah. That's unfortunate.
It's going to be in the mid-80s today. 84 is going to be the high.
Oh.
It's partly cloudy conditions.
Bo Cantori over here.
It's going to be a perfect day for me to hit nine holes on the MGA. Might even get the range before. Maybe get a little working, get a little lather, go inside, get a transfusion, and then get out there. And
will you guys make peace?
No. He can
you
cry
need to make
all he
sure
wants.
You bring some Aleve for Carter's question. Back after he carries you for nine holes tonight, okay? I'm just throwing that out there.
He stole his question.
By the way, I literally, back here, we felt the vibration when Mike slammed his head down the
like
table.
A weight joke.
No, it's more about you being strong. Like you.
Whoa, there's a lot happening here.
Dylan, I want to go ahead and warn you that the big offensive lineman's in his fillings, so you might want to tread
not
lightly.
Bear.
I can confirm.
He'll stomp out of here. He probably won't even stop by the office on his way out. He'll stomp out.
Just want some peace. That's
leaning forward like he walks. You know what? It's Texas Scramble tonight, so we're probably going to use seven of his drives, if memory serves.
The other two are par threes.
No, I was counting par threes. I've actually, my driver's been knock
sure
on wood.
It has.
Hey,
sure it has.
Knock on wood, Garrett, behind you.
You don't turn have to lie to us. That big you could just door. Throw to your segment. Don't lie to us. Don't lie to the people.
The driver has been improving slowly but surely. You know, like, I don't know. My segment's always been fire.
Yeah, you couldn't even.
So unsmooth.
Boo. Boo that man. Oh, my gosh. Just do it.
He backed himself into a corner and couldn't find his way out. He's like slowly improving, just like my segment. No, I can't say that.
Not exactly.
You know, Tiffany, I would warn you to boo the meat man, who's also the W sauce man, during his own segment. When the W sauce is mentioned.
And didn't she ask for some W sauce earlier in the show?
You know what, Dylan? She did. She actually demanded.
Yeah, Dylan, you did.
You've not been on my side for quite some time now.
I'm always on your side. I'm on the side of truth and justice.
You want me to act like you don't exist? Because I'm really good at that. I'm really good
No, at Tiff,
that.
I don't
I
want that.
I don't even see you. I only
I'm
see
just
Garrett
fair.
In there.
I'm just fair. That's all I am
all
is
I
fair.
All I see is Garrett. Who's talking? You want to talk, Bo, since it's your segment? That you said is great?
It is great.
He's acting like you don't exist.
All right, you know what? I've had enough. Tiffany's mad at Dylan. Mike's mad at me. Garrett needs cheese in his grits. I can't live like this.
Our pets' heads are falling off. Okay.
Yes. Anyways, it is MGA night. I'm excited. And it's also a moment for me to mention this Brown Grass Charity Classic is coming up November 25th. You can sign up today. I don't know what you're waiting for, because if you wait too long, you're going to be like half of y'all were last year asking me how you got into a tournament that was already full. Don't be that guy. Go to 92.9 The Game website, the events page. Click on the events page. It'll show up right there. It is for Pets for Vets, obviously a charity. You might as well get Allison to go get her and the news crew from over there.
Her and the news crew. Why do you sound like you're news like 60? Her and those
like a,
TV
sounds like a line
people,
from Anchorman.
Her and those news folks.
To sign up.
People that read the news.
You know what? Maybe I can hit Jason Kelsey up, since he has he's on a apology crew to the city of Atlanta. Because I don't know if you guys noticed, if you were not smart enough to sync up the Falcons Radio Network to your TV, and you had to endure the debacle that was Monday Night Football, Philadelphia Love Fest, and Jason Kelsey and Clam.
That's exactly what it sounded like. I heard it.
It was, but even Kelsey has said, and I quote, "Atlanta had to deal with me for 4 hours before things got rough for the Eagles." Yeah, that's true. We did, because it was a love fest. And he goes, "Look, I want to apologize to Falcons fans watching, because I understand that you just had to watch just a Philadelphia celebration and a parade of a former player coming back home." He talked about it on his podcast. He said, he goes, "At the same time, though, I fully understand why," he talked about how cool it was for him to come back and be a part of it. But he goes, "At the same time, I fully understand why a bunch of Atlanta people hate my guts right now, so I apologize." Mm. I'm going to tell Jason Kelsey something right now. Don't hate your guts. Mm. Never have. Don't know if I ever will. I've heard a lot of you, and I'm probably could hear less from you these days, but I don't hate you, and I understand this is what ESPN does. What I will tell you, though, is you're not the person that should be apologizing. The network should be apologizing, because they buy the rights to do these games, and I think they owe it to every fan base that is on Monday Night Football to give at least somewhat fair coverage. You know, 60-40 I get, but that was like 95-5. In fact, you had to go to an alternating broadcast just to get anything Atlanta-centric, which was Matt Ryan, who's actually from Philadelphia. So I think the network is the one who should be apologizing. I appreciate Jason Kelsey, and I think it's very smart of him, and he definitely understands it.
I think it's on brand of him to be a nice human being. apologize.
I agree. I think you're right, Tiffany. I just don't think he's the one that should have been doing it. I appreciate it, but I think the network should have apologized to us as well.
I completely agree, and I think it's probably in the offensive lineman's blood sometimes to apologize when you don't need to, and yet there he is, man, laying it all on the line. But that's just
is this your apology to me for screaming at me in the last segment?
No, that's not coming. I don't apologize for that at all.
Well, you just said fault. That's what offensive linemen do. They apologize even when they don't think they should.
No, you can apologize to me later. We'll talk about that another time. But no, shout out to him, man. I honestly think he's good. He's entertaining. He's funny. It's just, as with anything, it gets to a point of oversaturation. You just can't have that much. It's the reason that a lot of people hate on all the other ESPN personalities. They might be good, but then when you see them 5 hours a day and on every social media and on X and on Instagram and everything else, and you have to hear every quote and their opinion on everything, it's like, dude, I've had enough. I don't need to see it. It's oversaturated.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, and that's why I just don't think it's his fault. I think they do that because they're hot names, and they are obviously have cut down on how many people they have working there. But some recognition of what they do to people's brands in the negative probably should be looked at it as well, and kind of, you know, let's maybe self-scout, as Mike Smith would say.
That was your Life of Squid this hour, brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. We'll be right back to find out what's coming up on the Steakhouse. Stay with us here in the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.